We will get lots of consumer advice today and find out what we're complaining about in Wisconsin. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We'll welcome our regular guests on consumer issues who join us every month, as a matter of fact, to bring us up to date every month or so. Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. And Sandy, good to see you.
Good morning, Larry.
Nice to have you with us. And Michelle Chalmers, great to have you with us. Michelle Ryan, thank you very much for taking time to be with us as well. Michelle, by the way, directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection.
Thanks for having us, Larry. It's always good to be here.
I think I've now got your, have not mixed your names up.
It's fine.
they've only been guests for I don't know how long, so I can't imagine why I would not get their names right. But I tell you what, they've got their information right, regardless of me, and they are here to help you out. If you have some questions or comments, I hope you'll join us. We have everybody's favorite, that top 10 list of consumer complaints for the last year. Sandy, what do we got? Give us some samples here.
Well, number one, I don't think anybody with a telephone will be surprised to hear that telemarketing was the number one source of complaints this year. And most of the complaints we got were about those horrible robocalls that have really spiked over the last couple of years. We received almost 2,000 complaints about telemarketing no-call violations. And most of those were from callers, you know, the cardholder services, credit card services, where the recorded pitch would offer a lower credit card interest rates. I think everybody in the world has gotten that robocall. And then a significant number of complaints where the caller was unknown. And in most cases, you know, the caller, usually a fraudulent organization of some kind calling from overseas, masks or manipulates the caller ID so you can't see who is calling you. And from an enforcement perspective, you know, we're an enforcement agency. Technology makes it very easy for these crooks to call you from anywhere in the world, make millions of calls a day anywhere in the world. And they can hide behind that technology as well, so it's very difficult for us to track them down.
Yeah. So that's the worst one.
That was the number one complaint we got last year.
Yeah, and Patricia in Madison, I think, has a comment about robocalls. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. This is such a timely topic. As I was going to write to Consumer Protection today, I really was, because in the last 3 weeks, I have received 29 calls, and one number, they called me 7 times in 1 day, and the following day, 3 times. And I don't answer these because I have caller ID, and so I don't recognize, you know, the phone numbers. And, of course, most of them do not leave any messages on the answering machine. They hang up before that time or else just don't leave a message. So even though I'm on the no-call list and I keep, you know, re-registering every couple of years, I'm just frustrated already to have 29 of these in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, everybody is frustrated by the number of calls they get. And, you know, again, technology makes it easy for crooks to call you from anywhere in the world for like a penny a call. We've been working with the Federal Trade Commission on these robocalls, and the FTC has had some success in bringing down these criminal operations. They recently took action, levied a $1 million fine against a group of companies that was using that lower your credit card interest rate pitch. I guess if it were an easy problem to solve, it would have been solved by now. I think I've mentioned before on your show, Larry, that the Federal Trade Commission, which is the nation's consumer protection agency, offered a $50,000 award to anybody who can come up with a way to stop these or block these robocalls. So, you know, it is a big problem, not only in this country, but around the world. And as frustrating as it is for consumers, imagine how frustrating it is for a business
yeah.
who's having its phone lines being tied up by these robocalls. So,
yeah.
Can I add something yet, please?
Yeah.
There's one call I've been getting, and I don't know if it's valid or not, and they do leave a message, and it's a medical alert system, and it's a Wisconsin call with the 414 area code, and they say the American Red Cross and Diabetes Association has recommended, you know, whatever kind of alert system for seniors. And I don't know if it's a valid call or not. It is a... It is not a live person on the other end.
Okay. Sandy Chalmers?
That is a call that we've received a number of complaints on. I am not sure whether that call actually is coming from the Milwaukee area. You know, these crooks can make it look on your caller ID that they are calling from a Wisconsin area code, which makes it more... likely that a consumer would pick up.
Yeah.
But, Michelle, do you want to talk about whether we have an ongoing investigation on that company?
Well, we're definitely looking into some companies that are doing these types of calls and working with our federal partners on conducting those reviews and investigations. I mean, Patricia, the thing to always remember with all calls and messages you get is it a service you need at this point in time? And when someone needs something, you go out and solicit the marketplace and find the service that you need, and don't wait for a business to contact you and let that be what prompts you to get a service. But we are definitely looking into this. So you were going to write to us and file that complaint, that I definitely encourage you to do that today so we can see that it's happening here in our state and that our consumers are being impacted by this company.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would add is that we've seen over the last 3 to 4 months or so a real spike in the number of robocalls with a pitch that targets senior citizens. Mm-hmm. So if you are a senior citizen, be doubly careful when you get these calls, because if you return the call, chances are they'll ask you for your credit card number or bank account number. And we hear from people all the time who have made a $299 payment only to find that, you know, it was a fraudulent company. So be very, very careful in responding to these callers. And remember, these calls in almost every case are illegal. So why would you want to do business with a company that's contacting you through illegal means?
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go, Patricia. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve in Racine, your turn next. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have used your service a couple of times in the last 20 years, and I found it just to be a runaround and a job security for the two women I'm now talking to. The first incident was business-to-business telemarketing calls, and I understand that business can call a business 24 hours a day and have no retribution. That was not what my complaint was about. My complaint was about the telemarketer screaming obscenities at me, and they did absolutely nothing but poo-poo it away and send me a nice little letter saying that they denied it all. The second incident was when I went into a store in Racine to buy three items, clearly marked on the bottom, three for $19.95. When I went up to the register, they charged me $60. I complained and complained to them, and I complained to you. I got a nice letter back stating their side of the story, which was completely bogus, and an offer to buy the products at the actual price. So I did win on that, but the reality is I feel you two women just are there to protect your own jobs and really don't do anything.
Wow. Well, I have to say, Steve, I can't agree with you on that. And I want to ask our two guests, and let's turn to Sandy here. When we look at the end of the year, you guys do some kind of numbers crunching and talk about various things that you've achieved over the course of the year. It may be worth it at this time to go over some of those achievements.
Well, in 2012, we returned to consumers in forms of restitution and adjustments made by businesses in response to a consumer complaint. We returned to consumers $2.1 million, which is actually a little bit lower. We usually return to consumers between $3 and $15 million. So it is a significant benefit to consumers. In response to Steve's particular experience, our legal authority is given to us, set by the legislature, and we have to work within those parameters. And I understand that people are frustrated when we can't go to bat for them individually, but our role as a state agency is to represent the people of Wisconsin and to operate within the authority that's given us by the legislature.
And I would say that one other, just to add my own two cents here, another thing that you guys do is appear, for example, on this program, which I think is a significant public awareness, public education role that you guys have, which I think is critical.
Well, knowledge truly is the best line of defense against fraud. And, you know, the thing about fraud is that it takes some willingness on the part of the victim to become a victim. So we do spend a lot of time educating about the basics of our consumer laws and also warning people about scams that are going around out there so they know what to look for and know what those red flags are.
Reed in Clintonville, let's turn to you next. Hi, Reed. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for this opportunity, Larry. And my thanks to the two young women that are performing a service for the entire state that is needed and greatly appreciated. I would say on my behalf, several years ago, three or four now, the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection very satisfactorily helped me. And I would also like to say, concerning the gentleman that called and so inappropriately maligned in such a vicious way these two young women, that had it not been for the services that they provide, the 50% of his success would not have happened, and he consequently would have been out of pocket 60-some dollars, evidently, that he was not. So they were successful for him at least 50% of the time. And this is a position that is made by the state of Wisconsin. This is not a position that these two women have devised for themselves. They are employees of the state of Wisconsin, and the state evidently considers this important enough to have these positions. So those are my comments, and thank you for the opportunity to speak here today.
Yeah.
And my best to all three of you there.
Thank you very much, Reed. Appreciate those comments very much. I don't think we even...
Well, I would like to thank him personally for calling me a young woman. I'm thankful that this is radio and not TV.
You're pretty young yet. Joan in Madison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'm calling about the same thing. I had a complaint, and to be honest with you, the debt cap people and consumer protection are really the only place that we as consumers have to complain when there's an issue that can't be dealt with a certain company or whatever. And I certainly hope that this isn't a campaign to do away with this agency because, again, the consumers need all the help that they can get against certain companies. And like I say, I took something up and I got restitution for that. And I certainly don't want anything to happen, as like the DNR has gone away as a protection to the wildlife and wild things. So we definitely need you, and I thank you for your help.
Oh, thank you very much, Joan, for calling. I appreciate your call. And makes you guys, hope that makes you feel good.
Always makes better. Us feel good. And the other comments by the earlier gentleman always help us improve, too. So we need to learn from everything. So thank you to everyone for their feedback.
Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests today with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, talking consumer issues with you. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer today. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we take a look at consumer issues and consumer complaints with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening, by the way. Appreciate it. You know, Sandy, we talked earlier about the top 10 list of consumer complaints. We got that first one out of the way, which was the robocalling.
Number two on the list is landlord-tenant issues. And that typically is number two or three on the top 10 list, I think, really, because there are so many people who live in rental properties in this state.
Sure.
The usual issue is a dispute over security deposits. And, everybody mm-hmm. wants to get their hands on that security deposit. So the things to remember for both landlords and tenants are that a landlord has 21 days to return a security deposit to a tenant. And if there are deductions made from the security deposit, the landlord has to provide an itemized list of what those deductions were for.
Okay, important to remember. Rusty and Stevens Point, hello, thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mike, just a quick comment, and it kind of bothers me that in regarding to the telemarketing and everything else, why do I have to constantly remember to call up and get on a no-call list when I would say the majority of the public doesn't want to be called in the first place? Why can't they change the laws or change the setup so where if you want to get the calls and receive the calls, you call up and sign on so you're opting in rather than trying to opt out?
That's come up, Michelle.
That has come up in the past, and we hear that message. The law requires us, it's a statutory thing that says that consumers need to sign up every 2 years. But during the last session, there was a bill introduced that would actually make the list permanent, and so consumers wouldn't have to sign up, and that we would be using the federal list as our no-call list, those who signed up there. So, we believe something like that may come forward again through the legislature this year, and we'll just have to see how it progresses to make that change. The words being heard by consumers that they don't want to have to regularly sign up, and so we're working to see what can happen and what changes can be made there.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So keep an eye out for that, Rusty.
So there's a law that protects the telemarketers, but none that protects the consumer?
No, what the law is just requires that the consumers have to affirmatively sign up every 2 years, and part of that was when the list originally was created. The movability of consumers and changing of phone numbers, and it gets into the legal validity of a list. Should we bring a case forward? And a lot of that has changed over time, so they're looking at making those revisions through these bill introductions. So
yeah, back then, the phone numbers changed every time you
moved. I mean, the portability was different.
Yeah, the portability was different, or you got a different phone. Now, even if you go to a different company, you can keep your same number, which pretty much I think everybody does. So,
yeah.
Therefore, hopefully this bill will see the light of day.
On that whole concept of opt-in, that's something that we've heard from consumers, but it's interesting. The federal no-call law and every state program that I've seen is a program where the consumer has to call in to register. It's not an opt-in.
You'd think it'd be the other way around because there'd be far fewer people. But anyway, there you have it. I suppose if you do it, you know, if you go ahead and I say, I'm opting in, I do not want, or I'm opting out, I do not want. So you've essentially signed on the dotted line that you don't want this, and I guess that's okay. That's all right. We should probably have to do that at least once. Thanks, Rusty. Shelley and Spooner, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I have a question. My daughter was a freshman in college last year.
Okay.
And she went to school out of state, and she got a part-time job. And now this year when she goes to file her taxes, the company has gone out of business, and they have not sent her a W-2. I don't know where to turn to because it was an out-of-state.
Hmm.
We live in Wisconsin. She was in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you had any advice. Can you file taxes without your W-2? We don't know.
Have you checked the IRS website to see if they have any instructions for a situation like that? It's outside what we handle.
It
might be worth it. There's a toll-free number that you can call, actually, and talk to an actual person.
For the IRS?
For the IRS, yeah.
That number is on their website?
The number should be on their website. And Rob Ferret will probably look it up for us too, and I can give it to you in a minute or two.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Yeah. What do you do in a situation like that? I'm sure there's a procedure for it. There's procedure for everything when it comes to your taxes. Paul in Monona, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning. Hey. Actually, a couple quick things. One. Is it pertains to the calls or the robocalls. I know these are probably exempt, but they're the telemarketing firms that call on behalf of charities, and they kind of really is pretty strong arm sell, you know. And quite frequently I get calls that say Michigan call on my caller ID, and so I just come to not pick those up. And as I said, though, when you do for some reason pick one up, even if it doesn't say Michigan call or something, it's something else, then it is some telemarketing firm, and you'll ask them, you know, are you that charity or are you a telemarketing firm on, you know, their behalf calling? And then the percentage that they do get, the charity, is very small by comparison to what the telemarketing firm gets. And then the other thing I'll say real quick is with ladies like yourselves or people like yourselves that provide a service like public radio provides a service, when there are less of you all and nobody is holding anybody accountable in terms of contractors or businesses and things, then I think people that think government should be totally shrunk down to nothing will think otherwise.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate your call. Paul makes some good points there.
He does. I mean, if you're getting calls about charity solicitations, that's one way charities do it, is they make lots of calls or robocalls, and you need to ask the questions, decide who you want to give your money to as a charity. And he's asking what percentage, how do you break down your money? And we go through a lot of charity giving education near the end of the year. It's tax time. It's another time people remember to be giving to charities and asking those. So usually you decide and then contact the charities you want instead of being hit up by the solicitation, because a lot of those can be really out of skew as far as how much money gets to the charity itself.
Yeah, and they are required, I believe, to, if you ask specifically what percentage goes to the charity, I think they're required by law, are they not?
They need to tell you that, yes, they do.
And if they duck and dodge, that is a pretty good indication that that's
hang
not
up right at that point.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. John on Lake Superior. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you, Larry?
Great, appreciate your call.
Say, my problem or my concern is I purchased a new truck, and as a perk for the purchase, I was given a trial period with Sirius FM, the satellite radio.
Yep.
I really didn't need it, and it dropped off. Then I was given a 16-day trial period, and I was notified by email that my 16-day trial period was about to expire, and I didn't reply. I don't really need that. The next thing I know, I've got a $30 charge on my credit card for a six-month subscription to something I really didn't ask for.
You know, I bought a car recently, and I got a Sirius radio came with it, and I have yet to even use it. So I'm going to have to watch, John, and see if the same thing happens to me. But Michelle, what do you?
Yeah, John, we're going to want you to file a complaint about that. We want to hear from consumers that have those kinds of experiences, whether it's Sirius Radio or other entities. When you get a trial period and that day's over, it's done. They can send you something and say, hey, do you want to continue? They don't get to just start signing you up and charging you for that unless you say, yes, I want to receive that service. We don't have negative options allowed in the state of Wisconsin. So if you wouldn't mind filling out a complaint, that's something we're very interested in, specifically Sirius Radio.
Okay, so what's the... So the toll-free number is
1-800-422-7128. You can call our hotline and have a complaint form sent out to you, or you can go on our website and file a complaint online or download a complaint form. And our website is datcp.wisconsin.gov.
Yeah, okay. And I'm pretty sure we've got a link on my Facebook page, too.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you very much for your help.
Yeah.
I'll be sure to contact you and put in a complaint.
Well,
I'm gonna
have to keep an eye on my bills. I really actually check my credit card bills pretty carefully every month because I had a situation a couple of months in a row with two different cards where I was charged some small amounts, you know, $5, $6, $10. And they were nothing that we had charged. And so we got them wiped out. But
yeah, that's good. That's a practice everyone needs to be monitoring. Check your credit card bill, check your phone bills for anything that you don't order. That would be a scheme of what we call cramming. They're cramming things onto your bill, small amounts, probably won't notice, forget that you did it kind of concept. But be monitoring your bills and follow up with your credit card company to get them removed. Check again the next month to make sure it doesn't reappear, and file complaints about those things so we can see who's doing that and make sure that we're following up with those companies.
Kathy and Racine, we turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the show. Just a couple quick things. When it comes to the robocalls, probably the most irritating robocalls that we had this year were during the campaign time when I would go home and there'd be like 8 sometimes in one day from political parties during the campaign left on there that I had to take off my voicemail. And that's even when you're on a do not call list.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about that.
Well, it was political, so that's loud, isn't it, Sandy?
Well, the political calls are not covered under the current state law. And we hear a lot about it, but, you know, we have
can't
to follow
do anything
the law,
about it.
Because that was frustrating. I was so glad to have all the elections over with. And it was like I didn't get any voicemail messages on my landline for probably 4 weeks after that.
Rested your landline up. Okay.
Yeah. But then the other call that I just wanted people to be aware of, recently I've gotten a couple calls saying, this is a call from Microsoft, you know, and it's somebody on a line who knows where. Saying, are you near your computer? And it's like, I told the guy, it's like, Microsoft does not call individual people about their software, their operating system, so this is a scam. And he said, oh, well, if you know that there are scams out there, then it's that much more important for you to protect your computer. So are you in front of your computer right now? And it's like, no. So I just hung up on the guy. But you know, I've received that one several times before. And the other thing is email that comes through saying, this is your Yahoo customer support and we need to verify, you know, your account and click here. And then you get spammed and hacked and everything. So just some things to be aware of.
Oh, thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, on that Microsoft tech scam, the FTC brought down an international crime ring that was behind that scam. And it was interesting to me because the news release went out and, you know, all these consumer protection and law enforcement agencies around the world were involved in bringing them down. And then we had a little spike, and I guess they were kind of copycat calls. So, you know, very interesting. And I have seen in the last week or so a number of emails of the type that you're talking about, emails that look like they're from Yahoo or Facebook administrator, encouraging you to click on a link or check your profile. And of course, once you click that link, malicious software is, or some kind of virus is downloaded onto your system. So be on the lookout for those fraudulent emails.
There we go. Thanks.
One just came in the last 2 weeks, so.
Yep. Thank you, Kath.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Don in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Actually, two items in this last week. One I replied on last night. It was you are eligible to receive $100 in a gift savings goods at Walmart, and evidently it was a gift card at Walmart or Target, and to call this number. They're open from 9 a.m. to midnight and Eastern time, and I have a claim number. And when I called, they said it was cost $4.90-some to do the paperwork.
Yeah.
And so I hung up, and earlier this week, we were gone for a couple of weeks, but going through the mail, there was one, like, from Publishing Clearhouse, a clearinghouse, where, you know, $1 million awarded to, and to find out what I won, you know, you had to sign something, and then there was, said, a $5 charge on there to you know, by check or credit card or whatever. And so that went into the circular file. So those are my two recent incidents.
Yeah, interesting. Michelle?
Yeah, Don, you talk about those, you know, too good to be true offers that you're getting in the mail or by the phone. If you have to pay to receive your prize, that right there says it. That's your red flag. That's, you're not winning anything. They're just trying to get at money. Often we hear from people who've paid and they then are solicited to pay again, and your prize can be doubled and pay again. And there's no prize at the end of the line. There's no winnings. And, you know, contests, sweepstakes, and promotions, that definitely made our top 10 again this year. It was in the 10th slot. But consumers, we hear a lot about these different kinds of fake winnings that they try and entice people to get some money. So good job ignoring them.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, and good for you for recognizing it as a scam, because unfortunately we have victims of that Publisher's Clearinghouse Reader's Digest sweepstakes scam every year. And, you know, they can lose tens of thousands of dollars.
Boy. Thanks again, Don, for calling. Appreciate it. Rob found the IRS number for me. So the help number for IRS, if you have a question, we had an earlier caller with a question that really the IRS needed to answer. The 800 number is 1-800-829-1040, like the form. So 800-829-1040, and that will get you to the IRS help line, and should be able to talk to a person when you do that. So we have, Jerry in Port Washington, I think, next. So let's go there. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Listen to you guys quite often, and I've got a different side of the perspective. I, you know, you haven't talked yet about the renter side of things yet, but I'm a small-time landlord. I one duplex, I've had a duplex for probably 20 good years now.
Yeah.
And I have not had the kind of problem I'm having right now with a tenant. Her boyfriend moved out, and since then she's been constantly late with the rent. She comes up with the rent. She doesn't include the late fee. Can I deduct those fees if I succeed in ever getting her out from the security deposit?
Oh, whether or not you can do that?
No, late fees can't be deducted from the security deposit unless you have some kind of other separate agreement that would indicate that. You'll want to refer, I hate to send you to a statute, but just so you have the guidance if you're going to pursue trying to remove her, you'll want to go to the Wisconsin Statute 704, and that gives you the procedure in giving notice to a tenant that you're wanting to remove them, so you're following that proper procedure. If you go to our website, we have a booklet called The Wisconsin Way, and it has links and documents to that, so you're using that procedure appropriately and won't have any problems down the line.
What was the number again?
704 is the Wisconsin statute that governs the removal of a tenant. There's an administrative code that talks about the security deposit and the different things that we handle, but the statutes cover the procedure he'll need.
All right.
Okay, real quick, like then, what would be some of the things that you would, you know, I mean,
the security deposit deductions?
Yeah.
It'd be for anything beyond normal wear and tear. So if you need to, if there's been damage to a cabinet or if there's been damage to your property, you could deduct for the replacement, repair of that, whatever the actual costs of replacing or repairing that. Anything beyond normal wear and tear of a tenant living there.
Okay. Would holes in the wall from picture, you know, nail holes?
Could be. It depends on the size of the hole. If it's a regular old nail, if somebody sat there and really did some damage because the hammer missed the nail and now you have a real hole you were covering with your picture, that's going to be damage. A little hole that you can take some
toothpaste or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is, and paint over it, and now there's no more hole. That's just regular. If you've allowed pictures on the wall in your apartment, that's normal wear
that's
and tear.
Wear and tear.
Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about that.
It
would put a foot through the wall.
Yeah,
a foot through the wall
is going to be a problem.
And I had no real good. I just said $100, and they accepted it. But, you know, that's been a number of years. All right, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, if you have more questions about this, Jerry, call our hotline, the 1-800-422-7128, and they can help you get that Wisconsin Way booklet and the other fact sheets and things we have written up about that for more details.
Thanks a lot for calling, Jerry. Appreciate it. Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking consumer complaints, Larry Mueller here, and my guests Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. You know, at the start of the show, I did mention a couple of scams. One was a vacation scam, and another kind of, as I said, love scam going on here. What do we got, Sandy?
Well, we love you, Larry. Let's be clear. On vacation clubs, we've been hearing a lot about vacation clubs, and they typically will send a postcard to consumers and with a claim of, you know, free airline tickets or something like that. Just keep in mind that most of these vacation clubs are not the bargain that they appear to be up front. There's usually a hefty upfront fee and then annual fees beyond that. And what we hear from consumers is that the deals that they get through the vacation clubs are not any better than they could get on Orbitz or Travelocity or through an airline. So buyer beware on that. And remember, when there's an offer of a free prize at a presentation, state law says that the the prize must be awarded before the presentation. And typically, that's not the way these companies do their business. So from the consumer perspective, that's something important to remember.
And then the love scams, what do we got going there?
Well, the love scams, you know, these are something you need to be cautious of. Finding a date online, no problem with that. You just really need to have a little bit of skepticism because it's high emotion when you're out there looking for love. And you may not see all the warning signs that you need to be aware of. If you're using a dating site and you're asked to leave that site to communicate with your new interest, that's one of those red flags to be real cautious of. You're giving out your personal email, you're starting to communicate, they may start asking questions and build this personal information about you, and now they want to visit, and so you set up a meet, but, oh, I can't afford to come there, can you pay for my airline ticket, or I've had a family emergency, can you send money and help me deal with that? All, again, red flags that you need to be cautious of, and especially if you never end up meeting the individual, and it can go on, and because you're in the midst with that high emotion again, you don't recognize this pattern that's happening to you. So just be really cautious of all those things.
Always when that question comes about wiring me money or sending me money, that's the point at which you have to really step back and take a very cold, hard, analytical look at this relationship.
Yeah.
And that can be difficult when the relationship has been building for months and months. So, you know, con artists love these scams because people are so vulnerable and they tend to result in losses to consumers, again, of tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, that's too bad. And you know, more and more these days, I forget how many marriages now are the result of meeting someone online. So obviously I think it's like 20%. It's like huge. It's a very high number.
Yeah. And stick to those well-known, reputable online dating services. But watch for the request to go off the site onto a chat or messaging or something like that. You know, the services like Match.com and the ones that we all know about, they spend a lot of resources on checking for fraud. So stick with those well-known services.
We have Vivian in Green Bay next with a question. Hi, Viv. Thank you for calling.
Hi. You're welcome. One quick comment before my two questions. Knowledge is power, and without these ladies, consumers wouldn't have the knowledge that they have recourse.
Thank you.
Among my friends, when I mention your department, oftentimes it's new to them. They are thinking Better Business Bureau, Chamber of Commerce, and I don't understand the differences there either. I hope that you could highlight that. And then I've had an ongoing 6-year problem with Social Security. We finally have it resolved without an attorney. But my question is, how do we hold them accountable? I've resolved this, but if someone less capable had received the same notification and reduced benefits, say someone who's in their 80s, how do we make the federal government more accountable for the actions of their employees?
No. There you go, Sandy Chalmers.
Well, I'll start with the Better Business Bureau question. I guess the similarities are we're both out there doing consumer education, which, as you said, is very beneficial for people because knowledge is very important, knowing what to watch for. The differences are we're a state agency. We have enforcement authority. We take a lot of complaints and follow up with mediation, working between the consumer and the business. But we also have investigative authority, and we can refer a case to a district attorney or the Department of Justice for prosecution. So we're an enforcement agency. The Better Business Bureau represents businesses. They sell memberships, and you know they rate businesses. They have their own internal criteria for rating businesses. We don't do anything like that. Our authority is again granted us to us through the state laws of Wisconsin.
There we go. Vivian, thank you.
And
the other question.
The question on Social Security and holding federal employees accountable. Would suggest letting your elected representatives know of the issue, and I think that's about the best you can do.
Yeah, and you know it does work. I've one of the things I think your local congressman or woman, at least mine, the ones that I've had over the years have been very quick to respond. Usually within a day or a couple days, you're going to get a response back, and they're going to look into things. And so I think that is probably is a great way to go when it comes to a government agency of one sort or another where you're having some problems. Yeah. Thanks, Viv. Appreciate your call. Bruce in Blair, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I did have some help from the last caller on the difference between the Better Business Bureau. I had a roofing contractor who took a large down payment to do a roofing job, and then he just said he didn't have a crew anymore and wouldn't return the down payment or anything. And so I filed a complaint with the Better Business Bureau, but I haven't heard. That was a month or so ago, and I haven't heard anything at all from them. But I wasn't aware that there was an enforcement agency with this group here that might result in a problem.
Yeah.
That's an issue that we would like to hear from you on. We just had a case in the Madison area where some roofing contractors were charged with felony counts by the Dane County District Attorney's Office. So this was a case where it was we had had some storms go through the Madison mm-hmm. area, and a company came in from another state and oversold their ability to complete projects, and consumers were left holding the bag on about $60,000 worth of roofing projects. So, do file a complaint with us. And again, the phone number is 800-422-7128. And that's a toll-free number.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Neil from Slinger called, wanted to know if the data are protected when you get on the no-call list. A telemarketing company does a telemarketing company get a list of no-call phone numbers? Could then they turn around and sell that data to the rest of the world, or what's the...
Well, state law prohibits that from happening, and if it were to happen, we would be very interested in knowing so we could prosecute that company, because you know that really gets to the integrity of the no-call list and the no-call program. People would not want their phone numbers on the list if they thought it would be sold to telemarketers or marketing companies of any kind. So there is something right in state law that prohibits the list from being shared further or sold on.
Oh. Kay in Waterford emailed in, too, and says, I have a small business, and I've been receiving calls from a firm called 2020 regarding how they have good news about how they can help me with an IRS issue. I've never received any information from the IRS that I have an issue. I ignore the calls, but wonder if you've heard of these folks and what their scam might all be about.
I can't say that we've specifically heard about this scam. This is a good knowledge learner for us that it's out there. We'll be tracking that now to see if we get any calls about it. But it's probably another way for someone to try and obtain information from you and a payment of some sort. You know, here, I'll help you with the problem that you have. Give me your Social Security number, copy of your tax records. It'll cost you $9.95, and they'll go from there and have some of your personally identifiable information. So good to be on the watch. If the IRS has a problem with you, you'll hear from the IRS. You're not going to hear from another company.
I'm pretty sure of that. Pretty sure of that. So, in fact, I had a friend who just heard from the IRS with, and he said, "Well, I'm being audited. Why?" And he said, "Well, actually, your name, your number came up. Nothing that you did. Your number just came up. He said, you won the lottery." Oh, man. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests today from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And they'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. So I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Stay with us. There's a lot for consumers like you and I to keep track of these days when shopping at stores or online and when getting help with taxes or when you're booking a vacation. Sometimes it's hard to tell the real deals from the scams. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Very important to know where to turn for help when we get caught up in a scam or to know how to avoid one in the first place. And Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection are guests today with us until 12:30 to talk about their experiences, to find out what experiences you have had, and hopefully to help you out and answer your questions. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back after the news. Over the course of a week or a month, just think of the number of times that you act as a consumer. Man, think about it. It's a lot. And, you know, most of the time those transactions go pretty well. Sometimes they don't. And that's why we have Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection to help us out and get us, hopefully help us out of some of the issues that we get into. And they're with me right now. Larry Mueller here. Happy to answer your consumer question when you call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And we have a Facebook question as well. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post questions or comments there. Nikki had posted on my Facebook page and says, "My sister and I started receiving text message subscriptions on our phone, such as daily jokes or Bible verses, and whoever was hosting them charged our U.S. cellular bill an extra $10 a month for the subscriptions. And to this day, neither of us know how they began. We do not have never signed up for this." She said eventually we had to convince U.S. cellular to shut down the option altogether. But that's something that turns up, Michelle?
Yeah, that's that cramming that we talked about earlier with credit cards. It happens with your telephone bill, whether it be your landline or your cellular line. You want to watch for those services that you didn't purchase or order that you're going to be billed for on a regular basis. And sometimes there are a lot of work to stop getting the bill because it's hard to track back where it came from. And we, you know, if you can't do it yourself, that's what we're there for. We want to hear about those to get after those companies that are doing that cramming. It's not a legal service in the state of Wisconsin. It's an illegal activity to bill you for something you didn't order.
We had a similar case not too long ago where the telecommunications company realized it was a problem, and they shut down the company that was doing the texting, stopped doing their billing for them, mm-hmm. and refunded not only the consumers who complained to us, but every consumer who had been billed for that kind of fraudulent text service. So again, it can really pay to file a complaint with us when this happens.
Linda in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Although this is not exactly consumer-related, I'm hoping you can answer my question. Should a person put their Social Security number on a job application? And do they need this information to do a background check before an interview?
Hmm. Okay, probably in that case, it's up to the company if they want to do it or not. They can ask for it. It's whether or not you want to give it to them.
That's right. And so ask the company why they need it and why they need it now. Is it something you could submit if you're the chosen applicant before you get the job offer? They'll do that background check. Ask them what they do with all those applications. If you're not selected, do they put them on file, destroy them? How do they protect and secure them? Because that information's out there, and you want to make sure you're giving it out as little as possible and that you know how it's being protected by those who you give the information to. And that's what protects you against identity theft, which is a huge thing that we need consumers paying attention to, monitoring their credit reports and securing their personally identifiable information.
Yeah, Larry, identity theft made our top 10 list at number 4 this year. Last year, it was the first time identity theft made the top 10. It was at number 5. The number of complaints doubled from last year to this year. So I'm pleased to see that people are really thinking about the kind of information that they make available to others. And the other thing, we are having such an issue with tax fraud. This year is, you know, the IRS is really getting bogged down in the number of fraudulently filed tax returns. And most of that happens because crooks get a hold of somebody's Social Security number, file a false tax return, grab the tax refund, and the consumer, you know, the taxpayer, gets a letter from the IRS saying, oh, well, somebody's already filed a tax return in your name. There must be some problem. So I'm really pleased to hear that she's being very careful about handing her Social Security number over to just anyone.
Yeah. There you go, Linda. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Boy, that would be a bummer to have if you've got money coming back and somebody's How do they resolve those messes?
Well, unfortunately, it can take months to untangle.
Oh, John in Pleasant Prairie. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. I love the show. I have kind of a landlord question. So,
okay.
I have a duplex, and the tenants have now said that they have bed bugs.
Oh.
Kind of wondering what my responsibilities are to that because, you know, I can't really control what they bring into the house.
Yeah, and they weren't there before.
Yeah, we set these houses up pretty nice. I didn't know if I have a responsibility. I understand the, you know, they're good tenants, and I understand the value of a good tenant, so I might want to help out, but I wasn't sure if that's something that I have to help out with. Or I have to make them help.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those situations right now that's newer. It's up in the air. There's nothing under the administrative code that we govern, the landlord-tenant ATCP 134, that says that you're responsible for doing anything with this. You need to disclose to new future prospective tenants health and safety issues or potential code violations. So I would actually contact your local health department or your county health department and see what's going on in that area and what corrections are working and what's happening that way, and see if you can work out a plan with the tenant, and if you're willing, you know, have that cooperative, because it'll impact you in the future with future tenants. Bed bugs don't just stay with the tenant, they stay with the property, so you'll have a future issue.
Yeah, and you might go to the University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Laboratory, or lab, Insect Diagnostic Lab. Phil Pelletieri runs that, and I believe they have some information on how to deal with bed bugs.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, if it's either there or it may be simply at the learning store, UW Extension Learning Store, I know somewhere there's a bulletin on dealing with bed bugs. It's not pretty.
No.
It's they're hard to get rid of once you got them. I mean, they're easy enough to kind of kill individually. It's just finding all of them is the problem. Roger in Westcott, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I've been trying to quit cigarettes, and I've tried the patch and all these different things, and this new thing called Blue Cig
came out, and I went and purchased it at Keyport Liquors. And I talked to my doctor, and he said, it's not FDA approved. Don't use this product. So I went to return it at Keyport Liquors, and they said, you have to go through the company. So I called the company, and the lady told me that they can sell anything to anybody, and they don't have to refund anybody's money. And I said, well, can I talk to a supervisor? And she hung up on me.
No. Nah.
Hmm.
That's worth a call.
Yeah, I mean, the state of Wisconsin doesn't require that product you purchase be eligible for returns. And so that store was, they had a no return policy on that. Same with the manufacturer, the company that ultimately made the product. If there was any representation behind the product that it was FDA approved and it's not, that's another situation of misrepresenting the product where you may want to file a consumer complaint that may get sent to the FDA because they would be the ones tracking any representations about their approval. But filing a complaint with us often helps in the mediation process of getting money back. We at least contact the company and see what they have to say, and they don't usually close the door on our letters.
Yeah.
Okay, so just in other words, go ahead and file a complaint with you guys?
Yeah, that will be a start for us.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot for calling, Raj. Deborah in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, I recently, it was about 8 months ago. No, it was last year. I'm like trying to like put it all together. But I called. There's an ad for Wi-Fi on TV. It was an AT&T ad, and it's still on. It's for $14.95 a month for Wi-Fi. And I called last year, and I was asking a gentleman about it, and we were talking, and I gave him all my information, and I was going to order it for my son. He was 18 at the time, at his address, and I was calling from that address, but the man said he was having trouble processing it, and he went and spoke to a supervisor, and then he came back and said, can I call you back on Monday with more information? And I said, sure. And so no phone call, and then on it was like a couple weeks later, February 11th, a package came in the mail. I thought it was a birthday present for my son, and my son said, no, it's for you, and it was a modem. And then I thought, wow, I didn't even like talk to the guy again. I never confirmed it. Nothing was ever clarified or
finalized.
So anyway, I get a bill. Now I'm looking at a bill from a collection agency for $366.
Ma!
Wow.
So I'm wondering, and then I called AT&T, and I gave her my account number and blah, 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 and she wanted my Social Security number, and I wouldn't give it to her. I said, I have every bit of information you could possibly need, and I said, I did not order this, and I want to know why I'm getting the bill. I still have everything in the package. I haven't used it, and I'm not sure if I should, just send it all back or just, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, definitely file a complaint with us about that. As far as whether or not they left their system and thought that the transaction was complete, but $300 is not $14.95, and that's where we're going to be most concerned with that representation of what you were to pay for and the fact that there wasn't, a completion of the order. So if you would, contact our 800 number or go online and file a complaint so we can get in communication with AT&T about the problem that you're having.
Yeah.
One other thing, what is the statute for a limitation for filing a complaint with a landlord who hasn't returned a rent deposit?
3 years is for civil. And if there's criminal aspects, it could be 6 years statute of limitation. So,
okay. All right. Thank you so much. This mm-hmm. is a great show.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Frank and Hilbert. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, it's me. Thank you. Say, I've got a mortgage interest question. Because of how I'm compensated, I'm able to actually make almost an entire year mortgage payments in the first few months of the year.
Okay.
And it took me a while to get them to accept that I could make them. But from what I can tell on paper anyway, it looks like they are applying the principal and interest as if I made monthly payments throughout the year.
Oh.
And I keep trying to explain to him that, no, that's a prepayment penalty if you don't apply it all at once.
Yeah.
And they say, no, mortgages don't work that way.
This, I think I understand your issue, but this is just a problem that we don't have jurisdiction over, and I would suggest that you contact the Department of Financial Institutions, and they do have jurisdiction over mortgage and banking issues.
Okay.
So check their website. It's Department of Financial Institutions.
That doesn't sound right. I mean, they should.
Wisconsin Department?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah. Well, they claimed I signed some paper agreeing to that, but I haven't found it, and at least a dozen phone calls, they've never found it either.
Well, there's typically, when you sign a, you know, when you're buying a house, I mean, the, usually the lending institution points out, well, there's no prepayment penalty. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all.
I definitely have a paper that says that.
Oh, well. Then I'd be getting on the financial institutions department.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, that's not, that doesn't sound right. Bill in Richland Center. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, good afternoon. I'm calling on these contacts that come in from out of state for people that are refinancing or going through a foreclosure process, and they send all these official-looking letters that are like from the Department of Housing or Equal Housing Opportunity or Notice of HUD Relief pursuant to HUD scene. And so then when you contact them, well, they'll have all kinds of gimmicks that they want to try and rope you into. And so I think all consumers should be very aware of this and then what their remedy is, whether it's consumer protection or through the financial institutions.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that to everyone's attention. Sometimes they go in waves as far as how many you get in your mailbox. But the refinance companies, there's mortgage foreclosure consultant laws, there's mortgage foreclosure different laws, there's refinancing and what needs to be disclosed to consumers in those regarding payments and services offered and contractual agreements. So there are some laws on that are governed by our agency about the mortgage foreclosure consultants, and then we partner with the Department of Financial Institutions because they have other portions of that law as well. And then we both work with the Department of Justice on these cases if they need to be brought forward. So all consumers should, you know, that are getting these mailers, read them very carefully, determine if it's time for you to refinance, and look into your local options, you know, and do some comparisons, check out the companies with our agencies prior to entering into agreements to see if we have any complaints about them and get full disclosure of everything before you give any money or sign on any dotted line. And if you run into a problem, file a complaint with our agency and or the Department of Financial Institutions. And through our partnership, we work through the problems together.
Okay.
Yeah, and what is your 800 number again for your consumer protection part with the Department of Agriculture?
Sure, it's 1-800-422-7128, and that's toll-free again.
All right, mm-hmm. And then do you have any public service messages that you occasionally air or send out to keep people aware of this possible situation?
Well, we do a lot of work with the media, and we have a Facebook page, WI Consumer, if you're on Facebook. We also have a service if you go to the our department website, which is datcp.wisconsin.gov. You can sign D. It's Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, datcp.wisconsin.gov. You can sign up for consumer alerts either through a text or an email. And we try to keep people up to date on scams that are, you know, emerging and going on right now. So that probably is the best way we have of getting information to people as it happens.
Oh, sure. And certainly on the radio for radios and NPR to have it periodically mentioned.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Jason in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a question between the difference between raffles and door prizes. I'm a coordinator for a charity race, and when we are seeking sponsorships, we often get, in lieu of cash or in lieu of sponsorship money, we often get like items that people may donate to us. And what we then in turn do with them is we give them away at the race as a door prize. And I want to make sure that we're in compliance with statute, because when we give them away, we open it up to everybody, can put their name in the hat, who's anybody who's in attendance, but automatically the volunteers and the race participants are put, their name is automatically put in the hat. But if there are spectators, they're invited to do so too, but they need to take that step on their own. So I want to make sure that we're in compliance with statute and that we don't need to seek out any kind of raffle license or any other kind of license to do what we're doing in this case.
Sure. I really appreciate your calling, Jason, but I will tell you, without the statute books in front of me and the laws in front of me, that's a very specific question to get into those detailed differences between those. So what I'm going to ask you to do is if you could call our 800 number and ask them to forward you over to Michelle Reinen's voicemail and leave me a message so I can give you a call back, and then I can point you in the right directions within the statutes, and we can have an offline conversation about those specifics.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What was the name again? Michelle Reinen?
Yes. Yes.
Very good. I will do that. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Sounds like they're bending over backwards to do the right thing there. But
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, need to check it out, make sure. And let's see, Don in Kenosha. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is initially whether a insurance company processing a claim for me would need my Social Security number to do that. Hmm. I can't elaborate if you need to.
So you have a claim coming from the insurance company, and they're saying, well, you have to give us your Social Security number before we will send you a check.
Right. Initially, they wanted that, and I said, no, I don't normally give that out. So she wanted the last four digits, which I gave her.
Last four?
I called back 10 days later, because I expected, you know, this to take a day or two. So then they went through it again and wanted my whole Social Security number, and I didn't want to give it, so I gave her the last four again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were right to challenge them on that. And, you know, you as a consumer have the right to ask, how are you protecting my Social Security number? How long are you going to keep it? Will you notify me if there's a data breach and things like that? And some will backpedal a bit and accept the last four digits, as your insurance company did.
That's very good. Thank you very much, Don, for calling. Appreciate it. Michelle, Sandy, thank you both. Time flew by again.
That's right.
You come back in a month or so. We'll do this all over again.
We'll do it.
Appreciate it very much. Michelle Ryan and Sandy Chalmers, our guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We will have them back in a month or so, and we'll do it all over again with them. And believe it or not, there's still snow out there, but hey, Garden Talk comes every Friday, and Lisa Johnson joins me Friday, which is tomorrow, for another edition of Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.